This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area. Jim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who has covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, TK Show, recording from the home studio on with my guest, frequent guest, and one of the early big ones. If you want to see the metrics, this was somebody who loaded it up early in the Odyssey era of the TK Show. It's a Giants broadcaster, star of Full Swing documentary on Netflix, the PGA Tour. I joke with him because his voice is all over that. It's Dave Fleming, of course. Dave, how are you doing today?
I think when Tom Kim fell in the mud and it was my hole, that cemented it, that my voice was going to be all over the Full Swing thing.
You were Mr. Like Concise Summary. That's what you are. And that's, you found your, you know, we go our lifetimes trying to find our things, Dave. You're okay on this play-by-play thing. I don't know. Maybe you should try it out a little bit more. But on the concise summary of rises and falls during the PGA Championship or any golf tournament, you're like perfection. I know documentary people really love that stuff.
Javi was teasing me the other day, Javi Lopez, because I was just at the Masters. And so he and I were going to see each other in Florida. So I missed this Tampa Bay series and he put the Masters on the app. And he said, I put you on. And literally the first thing I hear you say is some, you know, amateur flubbed a chip. And I go, oh. It's like, that's all you said.
That's all you have to do with the Masters, right?
That's all you got to do.
The underplay.
Yeah.
The framing. You're very good at the frame. Well, let's just go like, is golf, I know you play, we have played together. Is golf kind of commentary, analysis, play-by-play, something that became very natural to you? Did you have to work on it? You know, is it just something that feels right to you from the very beginning?
I think it came naturally and I only say that because I had never done it before and nobody told me how to do it. Mm-hmm. So they just put me there and said, go. So it must have come pretty naturally. I mean, look, I think golf more than any sport, the play-by-play, hole announcer, whatever you want to call my job, you really don't have to say that much. Like, just give the context of, how's the guy been playing? Is this a tough hole? Is this a difficult shot? And leave it at that. And there, you know, too much golf. There's too much yammering in golf.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's too much yammering without making a real point. Like, make your point. Don't be afraid to have an opinion about how a guy's playing or how a shot is played. But it doesn't have to just be this endless parade of nothing. And I think a lot of golf television, unfortunately, is that. I hate to say that. I'm not calling out any one individual, but I also have the luxury of doing the only two tournaments I do are majors. So it makes it a lot easier when the stakes are big. You don't have to create drama. You don't have to create stakes. They just exist. But I do love doing golf. I love the other thing you have to do as a golf announcer is be paying close attention. Like, you have to notice the details. You have to know where everybody is on the course. You have to know who's playing with whom. You have to be good at, because the producer doesn't have time to give you, the producer might say, we're going to this next shot, but that's it. Like, so you have to be aware of everything that's going on. And I do think I'm decent at that. Like I can follow the arc of the tournament, everybody that's out there, and keep track in my head of what's going on.
That's the full swing thing, right? It's like, oh no, they don't tough putt there for Finau, but he needs to make it in order to get that. That's what they want.
Little snippets of.
Yeah. And it works on the broadcast. Like it's a bridge instead of just jumping around, not knowing where you are, it's a bridge in where you are, fitting you somewhere instead of just like flying all over. Anyway, people are interested in
you. I am proud of our ESPN golf coverage because we don't get to do very much of it during the year. We're not a big part of golf television, but I think when you watch our coverage, we show shots. Like we are gonna show a ton of golf. We're not going to ignore players. We're going to get you all over the course and show interesting shots and show you a lot of players. And to me, that's the way I like it. Makes it move so much faster. The more shots you show, the less golf becomes boring when you're just watching a guy line up a putt for 40 seconds. Like if you can time it so that you eliminate that and show more shots, that's good for everybody.
All right. People did turn into this podcast to hear you and me talk about golf. And,
yeah. Let's move on.
But we can keep doing it. We'll do it all. We'll do it other times. But I just laugh every time I hear you on that. You are a lot. So I laugh a lot.
Yeah.
Giants are 14-15, decent homestand. They're starting. You're in Boston now. I'm sure they're starting a series in Boston. I'll just ask the general thing to set this all up. What do you think the vibe is around the team? I mean, it was not looking great, obviously, early in the season. The pitching, though, has been fantastic, starting pitching at least. The hitting, not quite there. Just what's your general feel for where they are right now?
Weirdly, I think the vibe is really good because I think they're very unhappy. I know that sounds strange to say, but I think they feel like here we are 1 month in, having played really subpar in a lot of areas. Like there are a lot of cranky people around this team right now. Like we have not run the bases well. We have not hit the way we want to hit. Our relief pitching hasn't been nearly as solid as it should be. If you ask people inside that locker room, I bet you the assessment would be like a 5 out of 10 at most, performance wise for the first month. And yet they have managed to win 13 games. And so I think there is a comfort in that. You have enough, it's a different feeling team this year too, with much more experience from certain parts of the roster at least. So I think there is a comfort in that. The guys who've been through it before realize how long the season is and know like, hey, we've underperformed and we're still in a good spot. At some point, you can't keep saying that. I mean, at some point you actually do have to play better in all aspects, but I don't think they feel like, I would say they feel like the starting pitching has been overall excellent and the defense has been pretty darn good. They've made an improvement on the defensive side that seems sustainable. Other than that, I think they'd tell you we haven't done much very well so far.
Yeah, I mean, you've definitely got some bats that are really cold. And Jorge Soler and Matt Chapman would be the two that I look at. I don't know that this is something that will turn around swiftly. Maybe it will. Just what do you see from those two guys? Is it a little bit of the late ad? Certainly Chapman was a very late ad. And like, are there alternatives? Or do they just got to keep rolling those guys out? And I would imagine you got to keep rolling them out. You paid them a lot of money, but like, where does that turn for those two guys?
Yeah, they're sticking with both of them for sure. I think they're slightly different cases. I mean, with Soler, I think Soler's always been streaky. The timing of his production has not been very good. He's had these incredible numbers with nobody on base, and then people are on base and the production is gone. That doesn't follow the real pattern of his career. So I think Soler's going to be fine. I think Chapman's going to be fine, but I think there's much more of a dynamic, to me at least. And this is just me getting to know Matt. You probably know him better than I do because
He's an intense guy. I know
he's an intense guy, and I think he really wants this to work. Like the idea of him in San Francisco, I think in his mind is like a perfect fit. Manager, city, fan base, place in the country he likes. But when you sign the kind of deal that he signed, like there is a lot of pressure in several different directions to really perform and fit. Like number one, I got to perform if I'm going to opt out and get more money. Number two, I got to perform if I want this particular team to take my deal and say, forget that. We want a different kind of deal and we want you here for a long time, which my suspicion is that's what he wants. Like, I think he thinks this is a great fit for him. And I agree. Like, he's a great fit for what the Giants need. So I think we're going to see him settle in at some point. Like, he's putting a lot of pressure on himself. I think he is.
Jung-Hoo Lee is a guy that you hinted very strongly. That's a guy the Giants were definitely in on. They do end up signing him. He's making a lot of money. One of the bigger Dodger signings out there. He's been about what you would imagine, you know, a lot of hits, not a lot of power. He's not going to strike out much. He's not going to probably walk that much. Is this about what he is, or do you think there's a level or two up for him?
I think there's definitely a level up. I think this is the acclimation period for him. The first thing is he is 25. Mm-hmm. So he's not even yet, you know, in this game, your peak can come early, but the learned experience, which he's now thrown away all of his knowledge from his previous league and is starting from scratch in this league, I think that's one thing. Like, the adjustment has happened fast in some ways, but he's going to learn from all of these experiences. He's going to be a more – I think he's been a good outfielder. I think he's going to be even better as he gets more confident to call off somebody, take charge out there. I think he's still, to my eyes, a little reluctant to do that in the outfield. His base running is a good example. He's an excellent base runner, but he hasn't yet been a good base stealer.
One stolen base? I see him thrown out a couple times.
I think he has two, and he's been caught three times maybe, which that's not good enough. Like, you got to be better than that. But I think he's reluctant to make mistakes. You know, he doesn't want to be the guy who – I think when he gets more confidence, he won't care about that. Like, I know I can go and steal. I think now he's in mistake avoidance mode as he gets to know the league and his new teammates. I've been really impressed. I know the numbers are sort of modest, but I think he's going to be a foundational player for the Giants. I really believe in this guy's talent. And it's funny you mentioned the money, because when you and I were talking months ago about it, and I had a sense that the Giants were going to sign him, the Giants I knew really liked him. I knew it was a good fit for a lot of reasons. I do want to push back on this idea. I keep hearing from all of these baseball writers, our own Giants writers and national people, and now it's being parroted on TV, like, the Giants way overbid. That's nonsense. Like, absolute nonsense. There was a lot of competition for him, and the idea that they blew away the market and somehow forget that. Like, just that's just blatantly false. Other teams were willing to spend a lot of money on. This is what it costs to get a talented player at that age. They did not overpay for this guy. So
yeah, I certainly didn't think overpay. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen all that stuff, but it's not that much money if he's everyday center fielder who's leading
off.
I mean, you know, if he blows out, that's a lot of money. But if he's playing every day, that's what you pay a free agent who's going to do that for you.
Yeah.
Not knowing exactly what's all out there, maybe just shows I'm not in on the baseball thing, man, Dave. I should know.
You're in on all the deals on all the other stuff, the baseball details. But I forgive you. I'm not blaming you for that. But I do. Like, I just think, like, this whole notion that the Giants set the market and went way above what everybody else, please. That's just wrong.
All right. Pitching staff, it is really rounding into an impressive staff. That's before Blake Snell has had even a decent start. You know Robbie Ray's coming. You know Alex Cobb is coming in at some point. We don't know the timing on either. Just give me a part of this staff that you've been most impressed by. I love Jordan Hicks. I was there for the home opener. I just thought there was a real control there. And there's in a sense that there's so much more that he can do when he wants to, maybe later in a game. I've been impressed by Hicks a lot. Who would you underline? Would you underline Hicks? Where's a spot in that staff that you think really, really has jumped out to you?
Easily, I think Hicks is number one. Now, there are a lot of things that have been impressive, but and the player gets most of the credit. Like, I think Jordan is an example of empowering really talented athletes with confidence and belief. And the Giants signed this guy saying, we know you can do this. Not just we're going to give you a chance to do it. You can be this. You can be a starting pitcher. We're going to help you, but you can do this. And I think that has been empowering for him. He gets most of the credit, though, for actually putting it in place. Most guys are not able to do what he's done. And that is like way dial back the velocity in order to accomplish something totally different. And it's going to be a conundrum. I know people are already talking about it. It is going to be an issue down the road. I'll say the one thing about that is Hicks himself has taken some agency in this. Like even when the Giants were talking to him, like his view is I signed a 4-year deal. My job is to be a starter for this team for 4 years. So it's not like this year is like make or break. I've got to prove that I can. I think now he feels like, okay, I've proven I can do this. So I don't think there's going to be as much pushback when it comes time to how do we figure this out? Is it
the
a innings, bullpen?
The innings.
Because there's definitely, I know Jordan the other day said, I think he used the number 130. Like, we're going to come up on 130.
Yeah.
At his pace, like, that's going to be late July or you know, something like that. Like, that number is going to pop up sooner than maybe anybody would have guessed. But I think he's going to be cooperative. It's not going to be like, hey, we're putting you in the bullpen, dude, and he's going to freak out about it. Like, no, that's not part of the bargain. I think he understands that something like that is going to come, and that's a really good thing. But he's making it look easy. I've told the story on the air a couple times. Like, I was talking to Harrison and Webb the other day, and they're like, they're pissed at him. They're like, dude, you're making this look too easy. This isn't easy what you're doing. And you're making us all look bad. Like anybody could just show up and be a starting pitcher because they say they can do it. He's been awesome.
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit after that first start and at home. I just got set like the perspective. I'm glad you said that. It really hit me. Like he gets it. He gets like, you know, helps to pitch well when everything is better in perspective then. It's like, I didn't need to go another inning. I didn't need to push this. We have to understand where I'm at. We understand that this is my first year as a starter, that I can do this, but I'm not having to go out there and throw 102. And I do think, you know, again, I hate talking about injuries because you never know, but this, you know, this drive line analytics, I'm not blaming them. It certainly helped a lot of players, but this, you know, demand to throw 101, everybody who throws 95 is going to have to throw 101. There's some repercussions, and we're seeing it on the injury list. Players getting paid for it. I can't argue with that. All right. I just can't argue with a player wanting to get paid for throwing 101. But I think it's refreshing. I mean, Logan doesn't throw anything over 94 and is comfortable. If he threw harder, it probably would be a worse pitcher. And other guys, like, let's just back off a little, stay in the zone, a little bit pitch to contact. You got extra stuff if it's there, but don't do stuff that is a beyond your elbow's capacity to perform over the year. I don't know. It's just striking me.
I agree with you. And I think it's really – Kyle Harrison is really interesting. Like, I probably need to have a longer talk with Kyle about this just to sort of see where he's feeling it because his velocity is down. Like, he's not throwing as hard as he did when he was the number one prospect in baseball, basically, pitching prospect. And I think if you ask, like, just – the independent scouts or prospect hounds or whoever, or even like opposing managers, maybe like they would say, this isn't quite the guy we thought we were going to see. And yet his goal is I want to be a starting pitcher that lasts the year that takes my team deep into games. And I think he's doing this intentionally. So he's trading a little dominance for some certainty and some longer term success. And it's really an interesting baseball debate to have. Like, do you take just blow it out dominance now and maybe your body blows out and maybe you don't, you know, you go five and that's it? Or do you take what Kyle is giving him right now, which is amazing consistency? He's got like the third lowest walk rate in the league. Yeah. This was a guy who the only question about him coming up was throwing strikes. That's like totally disappeared. So it's a really cool actual baseball debate. And the Giants seem to be leaning, and whether it's a group effort or whether it's, you know, that's another good question for Giants decision makers, or is like, are we really doing this intentionally? Or is that just these individuals? That's just how they want to go about it.
Well, the Blake Snell situation might lead you the other direction, because I think that's what he's just so determined to throw swing and miss stuff that I think it takes him out of game sometimes. Obviously, two-time Cy Young Award. What can I say? I'm just saying, when I watch him, and not just for the Giants, I know Padres fans jumped all over me when I said this is this can get annoying to watch. I was saying it about his entire career, where he just doesn't pitch to contact ever. And I get it. He's got incredible stuff. I'm not ripping him. I'm just saying that's the complete opposite of what we're seeing from Hicks and Harrison. And I am like a Hicks and Harrison kind of guy with pitching. I just like those guys. Like, he can get to the sixth. He can get to the seventh. Bumgarner, you know, that's the quintessential pitcher like that. He's pitching to the length of the game, not to just blow everybody out. You're right. I should write on. I'm going to ask some questions about that. It's a great point. We're just talking through stuff. One of the reasons why I like having Dave Fleming on, he makes me think about stuff. And maybe you'll see some columns from me on this.
I think it's for the whole game, and for this team specifically, it's a really interesting idea of what do we trade for dominant stuff and velocity, and also for health to get certainty and consistency and innings. And I think it's a really cool thing that's happening with the Giants.
So I guess a little leery talking to pitchers about that, because they don't want to talk about injuries, right? It's a little like, you know, maybe they will. Now it's such a prevalent thing. It's like, you just don't want to jinx yourself, but we'll see. I should assign myself that into the future. I'm scheduled to talk about somebody in a little bit who was a prominent member of the three championship teams. Caught many of those pitchers. I wanted to talk to Buster because, like, listen, this team we're seeing now probably built around a really solid leadership kind of catcher. Doesn't say a lot, but you see the leadership and a really good starting rotation. that sounds familiar. I'm not saying this team is anywhere on that path. I mean, Lincecum, Kane, those guys are Bumgarner. They're just another level. Posey, obviously another level. But do you see that structure here, Dave? And do you think that was intentional?
I do think it's intentional. I think it's the best way to build a team in our ballpark with our franchise competing against the teams we're now competing against, and one team in particular. Like, it's really hard to resist the idea that the Dodgers are going to go sign every big money, big ticket free agent. We have to try to do the same thing. You don't, in this sport, you don't have to do it that way. You don't. And there is a well-worn path in the Giants' recent history that says you don't have to do it that way. And I think it is intentional the way the Giants are also leaning in hard to, it would be a stretch to say they're struggling with position player development, because Patrick Bailey's turning into a really nice player. The Giants deserve some credit for Tyro Estrada, even though he wasn't signed by the Giants, for helping him become a really good, consistent big league player. Lamont Wade, same thing. Like, the Giants are not clueless when it comes to the position player side, but it wouldn't be controversial at all to say, what's the Giants' strength right now developmentally? It's pitching. Like, they're really good at developing, finding pitching. So lean into that. You're good at that. Let's accentuate that. And how do you accentuate that? Keep drafting talented pitchers and support them with really good defense. And the number one reason why Nick Ahmed is playing out there right now is because he's still a really good defender at short. And it's made the Giants pitchers better. And so it is intentional. It's sustainable. And I hope they keep leaning that way. I think Bailey can be a foundational position player piece. I think Jung-Hoo Lee can absolutely be that. You know, you can debate some of the other position players based on age and production, whether they can be that. Maybe you need one or two more, and then lean hard into the pitching and defense side. And they can be a championship kind of team that way.
I think Brian Sabian and Dick Tidrow would agree with you from 10 years ago. I mean, that's what they did, right? They just and Tidrow was great at identifying those pitchers, and Sabian could, you know, plot them in, could build a bullpen. Again, not saying this team is that team, but I do see some similarities. We'll see if the old number 28 is going to agree with me. I think he might agree with me a little bit.
I think he will. And just one other quick point on that. Like, this is so hard to pin down, but It would be interesting. I think the end of the Giants dynasty, there was one large reason why it happened and happened sort of abruptly is the Giants did not adjust to the change in the baseball very well. You know, the Giants kind of got left behind in the home run department. And it's really hard to make up for that. Like they got lapped with hitting the long ball. And whether they didn't anticipate it, didn't have the people to adjust to it when it happened or whatever the reason, like they started facing these huge home run deficits and it kind of sunk them for a few years. Now, home runs are down. Like whether the Giants anticipated that or not, like right now, the way the Giants are playing seems very well equipped to the way the game is being played right now. Some of the rule changes and then just the look, I'm not in a lab. I don't know the baseballs, but home runs are down.
Yep.
And this Giants team right now seems equipped to play the kind of ball that lends itself to.
All right. I have to hurry this up because I am talking to a catcher, a retired catcher in a little bit. It's a great conversation, but I don't want it short shrift. Dave Fleming, you always have something to say. There's always a platform here for you. What do you want to talk about? Stanford, got any issues with Stanford going to the ACC? What's on your mind these days just generally in sports?
Well, I mean, look, it's not a coincidence. Tar Vanderveer retires.
Yep.
She said it wasn't because of the ACC. Cameron Brink goes to the WNBA, says, I would have stayed, but I just couldn't handle the thought of going to the ACC.
Long flights,
The other young woman who was so great at the end of the year is transferring to USC.
Yep.
You know, Stanford to USC. Peja Stojakovic's kid is going from Stanford to Cal.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to piss Cal people off, but the idea that a kid is going to transfer from Stanford and go to Cal should be a massive red flag alarm for everybody in that department to say, what are we still not getting right for this to possibly happen? And I love Mark Madsen, and I love what he did this year. He did a great job. I love Madsen. I can understand why a kid would want to go play. But you're leaving Stanford to stay in the Bay Area to go to the same ACC weird travel scenario. I mean, is that a pure cash payment or like, is there something about the infrastructure right now in that athletic department? I will say this. I had a good long talk with two people recently. One was Troy Taylor, that football coach. I think he's got a good plan in place. I think Stanford football, with all the challenges, is going to be better. It's going to take him a couple more years. I think he's a really good fit. I think he's going to do a nice job there. And I know you know this, but I saw Andrew Luck a bunch of times this winter. Andrew is really engaged with Stanford right now. You know, he lives in Menlo Park. He's on campus a lot. He's coming to games. He's trying desperately to rally the administration, the alums, everybody because he cares about what I care about. Sports is a big part of that school. Yeah. And just eliminating it, which is close to what they've done the last few years, stinks. So I feel good that Andrew is on the case and I hope he keeps at it because I love that guy and I love his passion for Stanford. I was doing the Stanford SC basketball game and he was the honorary captain. And Jared Haas, who, you know, Jared's a nice guy, but Jared gave him the worst intro I've ever heard he had the players gathered at midcourt and he was going to ask Andrew to give like a pep talk after the shoot around before the game. And, you know, these kids are 18 years old. They may not even know Andrew Luck. Like, and Jared goes, here's Andrew Luck. I was like, hey, you couldn't pump him up a little better than that. He gave the best. I wanted to go play. Like his passion is so cool. So I wish him luck and I hope I can help him out somehow. Cause we're a mess right now, a mess.
I don't want to tip off anything. He had another Dave Fleming column idea for me there. It's like, oh, Jesus, I should, you know, I mean, he's been very media, you know, he doesn't want to put himself out there, but man, Andrew Luck is a representation of a re-rise of Stanford sports. That would be fascinating.
He's in the middle of it all too. Yeah. Like, I bet you he wants to talk about this. He loves it. And I bet you he wants to talk.
Okay. Let's do it. All right, everybody, version of a question I've asked Dave many times. I don't know if I asked him this one, at least not recently. Dave Fleming, what's your favorite restaurant right now?
Favorite? Okay, can I give you two?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. One, because my diet has changed so drastically, this is a more complicated question for me. So I'm kind of off the board for probably most of your listeners, but there is an amazing vegan sushi restaurant in San Francisco.
Wow.
It is mind-blowingly awesome. It's called Shizen, S-H-I-Z-E-N. It's all vegetable sushi.
Wow.
And it is what they do is incredible. You have to time out, like pack them in. It's hard to get in. You got to plan out your visit. But everybody, vegans and non-vegans alike, should go there just to have your mind blown.
Okay.
It is amazing what they do. And I'll give a plug for a little neighborhood place out in the sunset out towards the ocean called The Laundromat. The Laundromat is a bagel shop in the morning and like a pizza wine bar in the evening. It's got a super cool vibe to it. I love I could eat a bagel. I don't, but I could eat a bagel every day. And it's like just a perfect San Francisco neighborhood spot. You should support it if you're out by the ocean anywhere. Go to The Laundromat.
Bagels in the morning, pizza and wine in the evening. That I like. That I like a lot. So
it's a really cool concept, and it's a couple that they're just city people and they care about neighborhood places. Those are that's why I love living in the city. It's like the true neighborhood spots are the ones that I really love, and that is a great San Francisco spot.
All right, everybody. That's a tremendous couple recommendations. Already got me hungry. It's early in the morning, but I'm hungry. And great conversation as always, Dave. We keep going on this, but you're just going to keep me more column ideas. So I'm going to have to write them down and go off and do them. But I appreciate it as always.
Those two, I can't wait to read you on those two. Those are good ones.
I know. That's the problem. Now I got to do them.
Do the work. I'll read.
I might have the 49ers column or something. But no, all good. I love the ideas. I love the concepts. And as always, I expect this to be a blockbuster show, David. Put up the numbers once again. Last one did fantastic.
I wish I'm not even on social media. I can't even pump it up myself anymore. So
with that, I will.
Word of mouth.
All right, everybody. The Wi-Fi might be banning us here, but thank you so much, David. Appreciate it. That's the show for today.